June.
So fall right in there, so it's,
oh,
it
I
could
see.
Be something like the recognizing.
Okay, it's your own.
All right.
They have it all.
Okay. All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kalk for a special meeting scheduled today. It is December 22nd, a little after 10 o'clock, about 10 after. A little background, I guess. The commission was scheduled to be in Ashley today for a hearing on case number PU08932 EDF Renewable Development. Because of weather concerns, safety concerns, we could not have that hearing today. So the setup was we're having a special meeting today to pick a date to reschedule this hearing, get it noticed. But there's always so much going on in the commission that since we're having a special meeting, we've added a few other topics on the agenda for discussion and rescheduling. So that's kind of my opening comments. I'll see if Commissioner Crispin has any.
No opening comments, except to say that it's too bad that we were unable to complete that hearing in Ashley. It would have been nice to get that completed, but weather is what it is in North Dakota in the winter. So,
all right, thank you, Commissioner.
Find another day.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
I don't have any opening comments.
Okay, the way I guess I'd envision this is we have item BK1 on a regular scheduled agenda, and so at the end of this meeting I'd like to vote on the new date, but we need to have the discussion first, so we'll kind of table this BK1 until we're all done here today. So let's go over to our discussion matters, which we'll go right down to rescheduling. Formal hearing, continuance, no, wait a minute. I guess I don't have to do it that way, do I? I can just talk about the rescheduling right now.
Right.
Okay, so general counsel, I shouldn't say that, our special counsel, Mitch, what do we got for dates?
We have to schedule after January 21st.
Okay.
The company is has witnesses that are unavailable January 28th to February 5th, so that time period is out. Other than that, it's more so the commission's schedule, my schedule, and Jerry's schedule. I've got my calendar is fairly full. Brian, I've got his available dates too, so I think we can work something in the commission schedule. It'd just be depending on which council shows up. The judge had indicated at the airport to me that we can just schedule, and if he can't make it, he'll assign somebody else to handle the hearing. So
what I think I just heard you tell me, Mitch, is that last week of January is the first thing to look at, and I see for me openings the 28th, 29th.
No, that won't work. 28th through the 5th won't work. January 28th through February 5th will not work.
So I misunderstood.
So we've basically got the 21st through the 28th, and then we're into sometime after February 5th.
Okay, so the 21st is a commission meeting.
22nd?
22nd. I could move stuff around.
Works for me.
Commissioner Crispin?
22nd works for me.
Okay. Well, then 22nd it's Shelby. If not somebody else, that was easier than I thought. Okay. Stacy, we'll need to move our meeting.
Do we have a motion for
them? Well, we'll let them. They have to get the motion tied up there.
You,
but I just, we had a MARC planning meeting scheduled that day, January 22nd. So, Daryl, can you just put that on for our next commission meeting to reschedule that?
What must that be? I don't have that on my calendar yet.
That was just our committee.
Oh, so it wasn't all three of us?
No.
Let me check one other thing, Jerry. We've got publication. When do these people publish? We need to get it, the first one in before 20 days before.
Yeah, they publish on the 31st. We got to get one of them in today to make that happen. And so 20 days from then would be like the 20th. The 21st. 22nd should be
fine.
Good enough.
Okay, so that the point was that we'd have this discussion, and Alana, can you get a motion before the end of the meeting to hand me, or whoever does that for us? Jerry?
I'm assuming Jerry.
I'm wondering if you could just make the motion, and then we'll get you a document to sign here in a few minutes.
Let's do this. Let's hold. Why don't you go do that right now, and we'll have our discussion. I want to make sure it's correct.
Okay.
It's just a procedural thing, but we've got other things to discuss, and I think by the time when you get back with the motion, then we'll pull that up, if that's all right.
Jerry, just one other thing too, when we need to check and make sure that notice gets published the 31st, then for sure.
I do.
Okay. Actually, check the papers though too.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay. Call them and make sure on the publication.
All right, thank you, Jerry. Okay, so if that's all right with my colleagues, we'll hold that discussion for a little bit. Now I'll jump over to our discussion matters with the commission. We also have a scheduling with the our third day of the RC 13 850. I put that on the schedule just because I wonder if it's worthwhile for us, the three of us, just to put some dates down that that might work.
Is there a time frame for this that we're operating under?
Once we, my understanding is once we've started our, the hearings, we're doing what we need to do. It's after our last hearing, we have 30 days to render a decision. Is that correct, Alana?
Right. That's what I believe. But if you're going to pick a date, should I get Jim down here? Jim and Dean, they have witnesses. They'll be the last witnesses. We go to 3 days. That's the date.
Well, I guess what I was thinking is just the three of us to find some dates that might be open for us.
Okay.
And then you to take that. Because we won't hammer this out till tomorrow, rather than the three of us trying to figure out what might work for us while everybody else is sitting around, get our dates,
okay,
and then see what we can do from there.
That sounds good. Can I ask one more question, though? Just because this time frame has been referenced a few different times during the hearing, et cetera, and I don't know what the time frame is we're operating under for this whole case.
Well, I don't. I need to look it up. I don't have it memorized. The 30 days that we were hearing about at the hearing was the 30 days from when they ask for a hearing that you have to hold it. It was like,
okay,
the first period, like you get this hearing held within that first 30 days. And then I believe there is, when you're done, you get a decision out within 30 days. But what we were hearing, what I was hearing, was the talk about having to get it scheduled in that first 30 days, which is why.
Okay. And do you know when that started? Do you remember approximately when those dates started? What was the time frame?
I don't remember. I know that these dates we were talking about, 19 and 22 and 23 originally, were all acceptably within
that 30
days.
We got it November 24th, so we had to do something by December 24th. So okay, we've done that already, which satisfied that 30-day
yes,
block. But then
you don't have to complete it. You just have to start it.
Right, right.
And then we have to, once it's completed, we have to make a decision within a certain time period. You think it might
be
30 days.
Yes.
All right.
I mean, I have to look that one up. I don't do enough of these reclamation cases.
Randy, I think there's another time factor on the other end of this case, though. If, depending on what our decision ultimately ends up being, certainly from a rancher's perspective, I'm sure Casey, Mr. Voigt, would like to answer as soon as possible. On the flip side, if it changes this mine permit dramatically, you know, those take many months, sometimes more than a year. If we change this significantly, that it takes that kind of time frame to redo something or seek coal elsewhere, I think that they're committed to having coal at that plant in about 15 or 16 months from now, something like that. So the company needs to know, too.
Right.
Well, I think
Well,
here's what I'll just start for the three of us, throw this out there, is that it's this week we've got a hearing tomorrow on this, and I'd say the rest of this week is not good for me. I'm available on December 30th or January 2nd, the first that I could adjust to. I don't know if those...
Yep, those would work for me.
Those would work for me as well.
Okay, so Lana, can you take those as two dates that would work for the three of us? And let's go look, because I think that's the problem, is I looked into January, and I didn't see much good there for a long time.
We should do it before the session starts, so...
I think what I'd like to do, Lana, Randy's portfolio, but basically tell the company and all those people that they need to figure out how to make those two days work.
Yes. Yeah, I'll get back to them as soon as we're done here.
Okay, because I think if we don't go then, it's going to be... It's not what we want to have.
And I liked, personally, Janet, the administrative law judge's comments that we should do our best to wrap it up tomorrow.
Agreed.
Yeah. Agreed. If we needed a short time, though, would the morning of the 31st work for you two?
Yeah, I guess. That's right.
Yep.
Yeah, okay, that'd be fair.
If the 30th and the 2nd didn't work.
Okay, so that'll get the second one. All righty. The rescheduling the staff and budget meeting, I just put that on there if it's okay with Randy and Julie. As soon as we're done with this special meeting, take a few minutes and then renotice that one for whatever time it is so we can move that 3 o'clock to the morning, Daryl, is what I was thinking, if that's okay with Randy and Julie. Just wanted that to be a
separate. I'm sorry, I was writing down our mine dates.
For the staff and budget meeting, that was just the three of us talking about what we're going to do for some of the budget concerns, staff concerns. Mm-hmm. I didn't see that as part of this special meeting, but I wanted to notice it instead of 3 o'clock today. As soon as we're done here today, we'll notice it 15 minutes later or something, so then the three of us can break and go to that meeting.
Okay.
So, okay, now we'll jump to discussion. Jumping around a little bit, Grand Forks Bean Company. Randy, you expressed some concern, and we've got a crack elevator staff here today, so...
Esther, you have a number up there that I laid, yellow card.
You guys might as well step up and grab mics, everybody, because other than...
There is no number here.
Unless you're... I'm sure you'll be called at some point to talk about something. Oh. Sue, do you have that number?
7-8-7-5.
What number are we calling, or who are we calling?
Russ Melland.
Who's that?
The attorney for representing farmers in Grand Forks.
Well, let's. I think
is
I'd like
listening
to
or talking
he,
or can
he,
we? Let's talk.
He asked.
What we're gonna do.
He asked to be on the phone so he could be sure to listen, as opposed to listening on the internet in case it didn't.
I see.
Work.
Okay.
So he's just listening.
Yeah.
I guess my thought is I would. That's great, but I want to hear from all of you before I bring anybody else in.
Oh, yeah. I don't think he's expecting to speak. He just didn't want to have a problem with the internet.
Fair enough.
Okay.
So, are these soybeans or dry beans?
Dry edible.
Exactly what kind do we know?
Pintos.
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 Good morning, law office.
Good morning. This is Brian Kalk at the PSC. We're looking for for Russ Mellon.
One moment, please.
He's kind of winging it there.
Mr. Bean Guy.
Russ Mellon.
Hey, Russ. This is Brian Kalk at the PSC. We've got myself and my two colleagues here, as well as our grain elevator staff. So we're going to go into our discussion, and I'm told that you just wanted to listen in, so I want to make sure you've got a good connection. All right, thanks, Russ. Okay, Sue, if you could, I guess, want to start on the update. Oh, hang on 1 second. I should turn it over to my colleague, Commissioner Chrisman. This is your portfolio.
No opening comments. I, too, would like to just have Sue's update. To
and I'll let you run
out.
This at this point forward for this.
Yeah. And the update will kind of include the background because I haven't
received
any of that really yet.
Okay.
Good.
Well,
thanks,
it
Sue.
Goes back to on November...
Get close to the mic, too, for Russ. So
okay. On November 18th, staff received a call from a farmer that had delivered beans some time ago to the Grand Forks Bean Company in Grand Forks, North Dakota. They had been working with the manager in anticipation of marketing the beans. The manager, original manager of Grand Forks Bean, died unexpectedly in July. His brother stepped in to help the estate with marketing those beans. Since the 18th of November, we have had a number of calls, three, four, five calls from farmers. Some of them have been calling repeatedly. What they want to do is they are trying to work with the interim manager, if you will, the brother that stepped in. They want to get their beans marketed and get their money for their beans. They had entered into some price later marketing agreements. Staff had some questions regarding the price later marketing agreements, which are different than what was filed here. So the question has come to staff is, do I have a credit sale contract or do I have a cash bean? Am I protected if we don't get paid? Am I protected by the indemnity fund? Am I protected by the trust fund? Whatever the case may be. So we sent Tim up, I believe, the first Monday in December to get a handle on the inventory that's up there to make sure that there was enough inventory to cover the bean obligations. And Tim's measurements showed that there are sufficient dry edible beans to cover those obligations, but I guess we have, it came to the point, it kind of came to a head.
the farmers are looking for specific answers. Staff has suggested, including in conversations with Alana on the phone, that they visit with an attorney that might help them with some of the questions that they have been posing to staff. And that's...
How many farmers have we heard from, and how many farmers total? Do we know how many outstanding receipts they have to pay?
According to the records that we have, there are 8 farmers, and I have heard from each one of those farmers either on individual phone calls or on phone calls that they have made together.
Did you say each of them or most of them?
I didn't. I believe that I'd have to go back and look at my records. If I haven't talked to them at least individually, I've talked to them as a combination, because at one point the person that has called more than anybody had called and organized a meeting of all of those individuals. And if I understood him correctly, I believe they may all have been on that phone call when I talked to that group of farmers.
And this, started in November? We started hearing from them, or when did all of the farmers start getting on board with their concerns?
November 18th was the date that I received the first call.
Okay. And then it's been, you know, consistent since then, or what's happened for the last month?
Well, like I said, we sent Tim up and we visited with them. We've encouraged them to work with the individual that's representing the elevator. We've had conversations with him. The farmers have indicated that they have themselves gone out and tried to find a market for these beans, because they are old beans. Makes them a little bit harder to sell. Mm-hmm. And the call started coming in asking about, well, you know, do I have to worry? Are these beans mine? And am I protected if something happens? And kind of how does your process work? And then there was a lull. And where they are right now is they have this market, and so they would like to be able to move those beans along. And it sounds like there may be a little bit of a I'm not sure that the elevator and the farmers are exactly on the same page, creating some concerns right now. I think that,
like, with price and like,
well,
what you're gonna
I think that Tad is the manager, is the person that has stepped in as manager, and I think Tad is trying to find his own market for the beans, has been unsuccessful. Like I said, the farmers have found a market, and the last time that they talked to me was last Monday or Tuesday, I believe, and said that we found a market, but we went in to talk to Tad about liquidating beans through this market, and Tad shooed us out of the office. And so we kind of feel like there's a little bit of a standstill and need to figure out how to go forward. But in the meantime, I mean, it's been going on long enough that staff thought maybe we need to take, you know, some type of further action, maybe secure, you know, make sure that those beans remain in that facility in case we get to the point that there would be a failure at Grand Forks.
How do we exactly do that? Because that was the 2 points I had, is that make sure the inventory doesn't move, and the value of the beans, it's always, I mean, we don't know the value of the beans, so it's hard to assess if we've got enough in there to cover all the debt.
Well, we put a value on the beans just using some
I understand that,
generic.
But hence the problem of not selling them. There's a value question there. But the big thing is, how do we make sure the inventory doesn't move? To me, that's the big question. That if we're sure the inventory is not going to move, let's let this settle itself out. If we're worried about the inventory moving, then we should make sure it doesn't move.
Well, and Alana suggested on Friday that we talk to Tad, and we did actually talk to the attorney for the Grand Forks Bean Estate about a stipulation, which they would stipulate that they would.
No, but just I'm cracking that. But how do you, if we could make sure that the beans don't move, do you put a guard out there? I mean, let's talk practicality of how do you, if we say we want something to happen, do you tell the sheriff to go do it?
Well, you have to issue either an order or have a document like a stipulation or memorandum of understanding.
But even that, they could stipulate and they could put the beans in a truck and drive down the road. I'm just talking practical.
Could, but you'd have a legal recourse.
I don't know that we have general authority to ask the sheriff to watch elevators inventory.
That's why I'm asking this
question. In general. But if we had an order and we had facts that made it look like that was in jeopardy, we could have someone help us enforce that order. The police powers of the state help enforce the order. I'm comfortable with a stipulation. Sue probably didn't get a chance to get to the end of the conversation, but the attorney for the estate, this Tad is the executor, personal rep, and he's trying to wrap up the elevator and who knows what else.
Is he the brother? Tad is the brother.
Okay. But the attorney said that he was comfortable, and he called Tad and then called us back, that they have no intention of moving them. They want to resolve
this. How do we document all that in case?
Well, I was drafting a stipulation for Sue and Tad to be signing, hopefully today.
Tim had a comment that I'd just like to hear.
Yeah, it's Tim Erdman. You have to understand the facility. This is all in flat storage. These are fragile. Edible beans are fragile. You're not going to just go and stick, you know, a conveyor auger in a hole in the wall and start hauling beans away because you're going to be damaging a valuable product. So they have to be handled through the facility, which is set up to handle the beans in a fragile, handle them, you know, to get the best quality. And that's not going to happen.
So you're not worried about that as a guy that's out there doing the job every day?
No, there's all these farmers understand that, you know, hey, we need to get these beans out of this facility, but we're not just going to go in there and haul them away, one, two, three. It's 80 truckloads, probably?
If you bring this question to me, I'm going to ask that question to all of you. So that should be part of the briefing, that we don't feel that there's a chance of these beans being moved because of that, and put that in there somewhere.
Is the what kind of an agreement do the farmers have with the bean company? Is it a credit sale contract? Is it a storage? What is it?
We can't say, and we can't give them legal advice, and it isn't clearly anything we've seen. It's nothing we have precedent on in any previous insolvency. So we could not answer that question simply for them. It's not that simple. And we can't, give private legal advice. That's what started the, I think you really should talk to an attorney, back in November. Mm-hmm. We told them that. And seven of these eight are represented by an attorney. And that's the attorney on the telephone. And he now is also, I understand, trying to contact the estate attorney, because we informed him of our conversation with the estate attorney. That was late Friday. Now, the estate attorney, I think, is tied up in court until this afternoon. We hope to be back in touch with him, but I think this other attorney also will.
And yeah, I'm sorry, but I didn't quite follow what you're saying, Alana. Help me understand what you mean. Usually when there's a transaction with a facility, there's paperwork to say this customer dropped off this much bean and they either are going to get paid cash or there's going to be a credit sale contract.
There is, but this is a document that doesn't fit into either of those categories.
Oh, so like they have an agreement, it's just we can't tell what kind of agreement it is. They've signed something.
They've signed something. Yes.
Okay.
We would have to take a position on that if it were an insolvency.
I see what you're saying. All of them have signed the same type of thing?
Except one.
And it's not the thing that they had sent in to us at licensing time that they said they were going to use.
Okay.
It's something else that we had not seen until this point in time. So there's a lot of good reason why, and it's very good that these farmers do have an attorney who can do this communication with the other attorney. It's good that the estate attorney is involved, because I think that diffuses whatever was going on with Tad shooing people out. I mean, it totally diffuses that, and he has made a commitment that they have no intention of doing anything except making the farmers whole with redelivery or whatever that takes. And it's good that the other attorney's involved, because they can work this out. I think a stipulation is probably still a good idea.
And tell me what a stipulation is, Alana.
It's just an agreement. I mean, it's like a contract. It's just an agreement that says, we got these calls, we got these claims, we're thinking of doing a cease and desist. Just staff. It's a staff thing. And the elevator says, well, we promise not to do anything with these beans without approval. Because we don't want to keep them from doing something with the beans. We just want to know what that is and be sure they're making the farm whole. And that's all it is. It's staff's, like, you know, has thought about this cease and desist, but is willing to agree on their promise to preserve the integrity of the inventory.
And say, and I understand from what Tim is saying that this is very unlikely to happen, but say the beans go up missing and we have this stipulation agreement. If they showed up in Minnesota, we could go to the Minnesota folks and say, they signed this, these still belong here, and that would be recognized.
We would have a better argument that it would be, because it's subject to the lien, the farmer's lien, a better argument that they moved into Minnesota simply to defeat the lien.
Okay.
Well, from my perspective, if that happens, okay. If it doesn't, then we might have to do something else.
I'm not quite there yet. Let me ask a few questions first.
Sure.
So we measured, and there's a certain amount of beans there, but how positive are we of the quality of them?
Well, from what I observed, they're fairly good quality. You know, that's just climbing down in and you know, taking beans. There's one small pile that were discolored, and, you know, and they were in a segregated area. And we, you know, they've been taken care of. The employees have been there for years. They, you know, that's their job, was to maintain the quality. So I think it should be fairly confident that the quality is there.
We're sure there's not a lot of cracked ones, more than what you would normally expect when you evaluate a pile of beans.
No, I mean, whatever the grade, what they were graded when they came in, that should be there. But, you know, that's the nature of the bean as it gets older. When it moves, it's fragile. And, you know, there's going to be some cracking quality on that issue.
Okay. And then, Alana, you mentioned a stipulation or an order. By order, I assume you're talking about a cease and desist order.
Yes.
And what would be the significant difference between the two routes?
Well, one's an order. I mean, one's a commission order. It would still have to be enforced. It would still be an indicator if you had to go to Minnesota with it. It would be a little bit stronger indicator. The attorney was, when he left that message, he said, you know, you don't need a cease and desist order. We're committed to this. And he talked to Tad, and he talked to us today. So it might be a little bit of overkill, but it does have more weight than a stipulation. It's a commission decision. I mean, you have things, there are other documents like Memorandum of Understanding, which could be signed by the commission and the elevator. Once you go up a notch to the commission signing it, and I wasn't thinking of that originally because I didn't think we were having a special, you know, time for a special meeting, but
the
commission could sign something. You know, so there's gradual steps that can get stronger and stronger. I just felt comfortable talking to the attorney, the estate attorney, which is I didn't even know Tad was an executor. So when we were talking to this Tad, I didn't even know what authority he had over this man's property, okay? But he is now the executor. But the attorney is a sort of a neutral party in the sense he represents the estate, but he's obligated to not do things like shoot people out of the office when they want their beans. Okay. So that's why I was more comfortable with his message back.
You said 7 of the 8 have these contracts, and I, you know, whether they're credit sale contracts or not, but whatever you call those contracts, does the 8th person have something totally different? Do we not know what the 8th person has, or what's the status of that one?
Well, the 8th person has scale tickets he delivered, I believe, in April of this year, and when I talked to Tad after one of the first conversations back in November, I asked him if he had some kind of a credit sale contract that I hadn't seen that he gave me for everybody else, and he said no, and so I asked him if he could either convert it to a delayed price contract, which is similar to this contract these farmers have entered into, or if the farmer isn't interested in that, if he could convert it to a warehouse receipt/storage ticket just so conversion has been taken place. I don't believe that. I'm not aware that he has done either. He has not gotten back to me that has been resolved.
Are we aware of differences of opinion between those farmers, the 7 with the contracts, and the elevator manager as far as when that price was supposed to be fixed and that sort of thing?
Well, the
any details of the contract, is it unclear?
There is some uncertainty on the contract that he used. Yes.
Okay, so if there's uncertainty, and I'm throwing this out as a statement, but it's meant to be a question. You tell me if I'm wrong, okay? If there's uncertainty on that, then it's not just the issue of whether the beans could be shipped away and gotten away with or not. As this thing attempts to unwind, there's going to be a big difference between whether these are credit sale contracts or not credit sale contracts when that's ultimately decided, if it turns out that there's not enough value in these beans to pay everybody off. And depending on when some of these farmers think that their price should have been fixed, they might have in mind a lot higher price than what we're assuming at this point in time. And so I'm not sure there's going to be enough value there. It just depends on when they thought the price was supposed to be fixed. If some of these beans are years old, they could have a time in mind when beans were really, really high, I suppose.
Well, if you let's say you have a failure and a decision is made that they are credit sale contracts, what we historically have used when we have an insolvency is the price of the grain on the date of insolvency. And I mean, we have
that's in the statute, isn't it? Might be.
Not clearly.
Okay.
But that is what we have a history of using, so that would be the date. So hypothetically, if we had a failure, you would use a date that the claim was received, and those would be, if they're covered by the credit sale contract, that is the price that would be that we would be using, and the protection would be 80% from the indemnity fund.
My point is, though, if we just do a stipulation where we don't have supervisory oversight over any transactions that happen with these beans could be marketed at a good fair price at this point in time, and there could be individual farmers who get a very high price because of an opinion about when the price for their particular beans were supposed to have been set, and that could end up taking too much of the cash and not leave enough to pay everyone off.
There was going to be supervisory oversight. That's part of it. So that part would be the same in the stip and in the order. It still may not solve it because everybody may make the wrong decision about how to market them or whatever. But
if we do a cease and desist, that doesn't necessarily mean insolvency, though. Correct? That's another stage.
It's a totally different thing. But we do have claims, so we have to decide if we have to pursue the claims, too. A cease and desist is a separate thing. You can do them when you have an insolvency, but you can do them without an insolvency.
Because if we do the cease and desist, we just oversee these transactions. But once we do the insolvency, if those contracts are deemed to be credit sale contracts, those people will get 80% regardless how much cash ends up being acquired
right.
for these beans. They will, once we go to insolvency, if those are credit
yes,
sale contracts,
exactly.
they just lost 20% of their
exactly. And
value.
So it would be in their best interest, really, if we could resolve
beans.
It. If we could resolve it by giving them their beans back,
yes.
which is what that's what they've been asking for from that very first call, is that, and actually the very first call was kind of interesting because a farmer called me and he said, I asked for my beans back, and Tad told me he'd give me my beans back, but I want the gross weight, and he wants to give me the net. And I'm like, well, if they've been scalped and, you know, the rocks and the dirt chunks are taken out of them, it would be reasonable that you would get the net and not get the gross back. Because if you get the gross, it would be the net beans plus, you know, Tad even said, what do they want me to do? Throw in some rocks so that you get back to what the gross was that they gave. So that was the very first call. I want my beans back. I signed this price later agreement. Tad said he'll give me my beans back, but do I have to take the net or do I get the gross? And I'm like, well, Todd wants to undo a credit sale. Tad wants to undo a credit sale contract. I guess that's Tad's prerogative, you know, with the overseer of the elevator. So that was where the start was. The farmers are aware that if it ends up in insolvency, and they are a credit sale contract claimant, they are going to get only 80%, and it's going to take months until they see any of that money. So I think what I have continually heard from the farmers is, I just want my beans back. Like I said, I think I said it here, I've talked about it so much, that they've actually gone out and tried to find their own market so that they can come and get the beans and that they can sell them.
What's our jurisdiction in determining the net or gross? Do we have any role in that, whether they get paid?
What we've always done in past insolvencies or past situations.
But if there isn't an insolvency, I'm talking right now, like if they can work this out.
Industry practice, which would be it, to
get. Yeah, do we tell them? I mean, is that something we decide, or do they work that out?
We don't. We're not in the business of individually deciding every transaction. But we can tell them that that's the way we would be doing it if we were doing it.
Okay.
And that we see nothing out of the ordinary. We see it as standard industry practice. Mm-hmm. And then if they want to agree to something else, they can still agree to something else. We're not managing the business.
I think Tim had something he wanted to add a couple questions ago, unless Sue got to it and covered it.
Turn the mic on, Tim.
Where do I start? First of all, you know, these are edible beans. There's a small world that these are sold in. So, you know, the buyers that in the community are not going to just say, yeah, bring these beans over here and I'm going to buy them from Farmer Jones. They're concerned about clear title here as well. So, you know, that factor comes into the equation here of these farmers taking their beans back and selling them somewhere else. And as far as the gross and the net, My thinking is the farmer wanted clean, whole beans up to the value of the gross. He wanted more beans than he was entitled to. It's like, no, you're only entitled to, if you delivered 1,000 bushels of clean, graded beans, you're entitled to 1,000 bushels of clean, graded beans re-delivered. So that's where that gross thing was kind of weird. But
they didn't deliver clean beans. They delivered.
They delivered a gross amount of beans in the process. Their scalp, the dirt and junk at, you know, a certain size actually went back into the farmer's truck and he hauled it back out to his field and dumped it, and then whatever was left there was still graded out as splits, foreign material, so on and so forth to a net amount of beans. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what, if the farmer would have sold them that day, that's what he'd have been paid on,
right?
Is that a net amount?
The net amount.
He wouldn't, nothing to do with the gross.
From your elevator background, Sue said they're using a different contract than was filed here. Do you get the reason why that is? Why they're not using they filed?
It's, you know, when I did the inspection in February, I have seen this before at another bean plant uses it. And, I missed it. That's all I can say. It wasn't on file here at the office, and I missed it.
But why do you think they filed one and used another one? Is there some reason for that?
I don't know. Is this something that the bean industry came up with that they've had, you know, at the bean dealers or something? I'm not sure. I don't know.
You're not seeing this, whatever this is called, used everywhere or something?
No.
That's become the new standard?
No. One bean plant does use it, but they have their, you know, their date when it's going to be either priced, and if that doesn't happen, well, then they renew the contract and put in and, you know, rewrite it for another year or another time frame.
And do you see a significantly worse or harsher impact on Grand Forks Bean if we apply a cease and desist order as opposed to if they sign a stipulation?
The public implication of an actual cease and desist order may interfere with these farmers working with the estate to come to a settlement. You know, the farmers brought this forward as a tool to force Mr. McGurk to, you know, to work with him. He was just outright, you know, chasing people out of his office. He wasn't working with him anymore.
Your sense is the farmers prefer not the cease and desist, but the stipulation agreement.
Yes, that'd be my view. Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, Mr. Mellon called this morning and he said that it is. He would like to work this out with the farmers because it would be in their best interest.
Does a cease and desist prevent them from doing that some way? I mean, do we then have a more direct role? How does the bean company do anything if they have a cease and desist?
The conditions, sometimes we've written cease and desist where we just tell them not to do anything, period. But many of them we have said, you can't do anything with this inventory without our approval. And I would expect that to be staff approval unless necessary to come to the commission. Mm-hmm. Because what you want is simply for them to be calling you up and say, and the attorney for the farmer and the elevator have both agreed that they're getting X amount of beans back. And you say, okay. And then we get proof that that happened.
Right.
That's the way I envision both of these, the cease and desist and the stipulation going, that there be this communication back to the commission that the farmer is being made whole. Now, that can come in different ways. So you put the prior approval requirement on either one. You can write it any way you want. You just have to decide what is it you don't want them to do. Well, what we don't want them to do is dispose of the inventory without our approval.
Well, maybe at this point, though, it's Commissioner Christman's portfolio. And I'm, for me, it's got to be, if you're not going to do, you have to do a stipulation or a cease and desist. I'm quite honestly indifferent, okay? But we've got to do one of the two. And if Commissioner Christman has a preference, then I think you guys should put that up and we have a meeting. But I think we're going around and around here. And I'm sensing you're not happy unless you get a cease and desist. So I think that you guys have to have that discussion and we would have to vote one.
Well, I'm curious what your thoughts are, Randy, on this, because I sense, too, that you want to go the cease and desist route. And I, you know, want to recognize the farmers. You know, they have the biggest interest here. And if they think that the stipulation agreement is better, then I'd like to know why, you know, what you think they're missing or why you think the cease and desist is the way to go.
Well, it sounds to me that if we do the stipulation, that gives them the most latitude to work it out, and that all seems nice, and I appreciate that they're being optimistic that they're going to be able to work it out. However, they also know that they have the fallback. If it doesn't work out, then they'll come to us. And, you know, that we're supposed, you know, we're in charge of carrying it through to insolvency then if they can't. By then, our position could have been greatly compromised, depending on what all things have happened in the meantime. If we do a cease and desist, I'm still not seeing how that prevents them from working something out. And if something is worked out that we're comfortable has all the parties satisfied, we would certainly quickly approve it. But to just wait here and then, you know, maybe the seven agree to something and it leaves the one out there hanging, or maybe some of these seven fracture away from there. There's any number of things that could happen. And in the meantime, we've potentially let some assets slip away that we may need to make people as close to whole as possible.
So the cease and desist provides us more approval, or couldn't we write the stipulation to have that same approval?
In my head, the steps that are going to happen afterwards have to be the same. Okay, and in my head, and I may be assuming too much or not thinking down the right track, you can write them both for whatever amount of oversight you want. Okay, I am hoping that is mostly staff oversight, because this is not going to be a one package resolution. This is going to be Farmer A driving up there with his truck to get his beans. Okay, you can do that. Farmer B, 2 days later, is what I'm thinking. I don't think it's unless they reach an agreement and sign a stipulation with each other that we accept. So the practical aspect of coming for commission approval and Sue and Tim saying that's okay to do that or it's a dumb thing to do or whatever is going to be the same. And if in the process, whether you have a cease and desist in place or a stipulation, somebody drives off with one truckload to Minnesota that they didn't take to the farmer's place, We are in the same boat, except that an order will have more clout in Minnesota when you go to get your bean value back, okay? Think Mitchell, okay? We had nothing like that in Mitchell. We had no lien, et cetera. So I don't know that I can write a cease and desist with any more oversight or consequence, except for things like contempt. Okay, you have an order and they violate an order, you can hold them in contempt. We have never had to do that for anybody. So I don't want anybody to be on the wrong wavelength as far as what can be done here. Now, we do have, I don't know if these claims that came in this morning, which I understand were from the seven farmers represented by the attorney, Sue, and did they all come in with all the paperwork and everything?
I haven't actually gotten through all of the paperwork, but I got email saying that I want to file a claim. And
did they attach things to it, or is it?
I got some attachments this morning that I haven't looked at from two people that sent something last Friday.
Okay.
The two that filed a claim.
Okay.
I think what they're trying to do is just, if you take a look at our insolvency laws and what makes up a trust fund, what they're trying to do is just protect themselves, hoping that if it ends up in an insolvency, there are as many assets available as possible.
What I was going to follow up on, if you had a sufficient claim filed and you wanted to say go proceed with an insolvency, then you would be taking action under that and you would put Tim in charge of liquidating the beans. That's the way that you do a little bit more. These
we
others
haven't processed
are
a claim equivalent. Yet, so we're not quite there yet.
Well, right. But what I'm saying, as far as more control versus less control, the stipulation and the cease and desist at this point is the equal amount of control, however you write it up. Now, the cease and desist, they do have a right to a hearing if they ask for one. And they may. I mean, and then they may prove that they don't deserve it or whatever. The stipulation, of course, they've agreed they don't ask for a hearing on that.
Well, how about this? If you can write up a stipulation that you're this comfortable with it is pretty much equal in maintaining assets from our perspective as what the cease and desist would be, I'm comfortable with that too. But if between various people involved in this, if they're going to be dragging it out and one wants this in there and someone else doesn't want the other thing in there, then I think by this afternoon I'd like a cease and desist order and we'll do it ourselves the way we want it. So if they're going to drag their feet on the agreement, then let's take action.
He can't read it till this afternoon because he's in court till, did he say mid-afternoon?
Well, but yes. I would just say this, though, is that the stipulation is where I'm at right now. And so if we do what Commissioner Kirstman just said, but if you get to where you want to cease and desist, we've got to reconvene again.
Right.
Because it's not as easy as just one commissioner saying, I want to cease and desist. We've got to vote on it. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have to have the same discussion again as why didn't the stipulation provide something. So it's not
Who's
quite.
Who's approving the stipulation agreement? Who's that got input on this?
Well,
that would be dragging their feet.
The other lawyer will see it when I draft it and send it to him. And if he doesn't like a word or something, he'll tell me that. But he's not going to see it till 3 o'clock because he's in court straight through till
but
3 o'clock.
To Randy's point, though, if
the parties I was talking about, I'm sorry to interrupt, but the parties I was talking about are the other lawyer and the personal rep that's managing the elevator at this point.
Yes. And I wasn't, the farmer's lawyer wasn't going to be involved in this.
No.
They're not promising anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's the elevator.
Well, I'm
and the
guessing
commission.
That it's going to mostly be what we want. Right? I mean,
yes.
This is going to
protect the cards.
Our interests. And so,
yes.
It's great to have them say, yeah, well, we'd rather have you say X or Y, but ultimately,
yes.
The heart of it is going to be what we need.
Yes, but the man could say, if you don't want to change that sentence, then I won't sign it. That's what Commissioner Christman's saying. If it
and
doesn't,
you can say, if you don't agree to this, then we have a cease
yes,
and desist
exactly.
coming your way. We hold the cards in this deal. We're going around and around. Commissioner Christman gets happy with the stipulation he likes. They sign it. Great. If they don't, then you come back again. We do a cease and desist.
Okay. Now, do you want the commission signing the stipulation? Do you want?
I personally don't like signing stipulations. I would certainly sign a cease and desist because I think that's a better layering up effect.
Okay. That's what I was thinking, but I thought I better make sure.
Perfect.
Okay.
Okay.
But
I fully expect that the stipulation be to your satisfaction that it covers mm-hmm. the things that we would in our cease and desist if they don't get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And that not, well, I'm going to need a few days to review it, and, you know, Christmas is coming up on Thursday and dragging this out because we can get a cease and desist done this afternoon yet.
I understand, and okay. I will pass that on also.
But I think it would be appropriate for you, Commissioner, as a portfolio holder, to go through with staff what you want in that.
Correct.
I mean, that to me is...
Well, I have a draft here. We'll do it as soon as we get done.
Okay. Good discussion. I'm glad this actually worked out to have this discussion now. Otherwise, we wouldn't have got to even this discussion until after Christmas. So, okay, anything else in that one, Randy?
No.
Okay, we do have an order now that's proposed, so I'd like to offer up item BK1, if that's all right. Item BK1, case number PU08932. I move the commission issue a notice of continued hearing continuing the public hearing scheduled for December 22, 2014 to January 22, 2015 in Eden F Renewable Development, Inc., Maricourt Wind Project, citing application case number PU08932.
Second.
On June 8th, the commission issued a certificate of site. June 8th, 2011, the commission issued a certificate of site compatibility number 23 to Anexco, authorizing construction of a proposed 150-megawatt wind project up to 100 GE 1.5 turbines. Since that time, there's been a lot of discussion. The turbines that now are available have changed, and we had a discussion a while back in this commission going that we wanted to have a formal hearing on this, so we scheduled that for today. Due to weather concerns, safety concerns, we could not make it down for that hearing. Staff has met with us, as well as the commissioners looked at their schedules. And we are available on now January 22nd, 2015 at 10 a.m. at the City Hall, 113 First Street in Ashley, North Dakota. And Daryl, have we been able to confirm that this City Hall is available?
I have not, but I don't think that's going to be an issue.
I think so, too. So the way it is now, basically this will continue the hearing. I think everything should be in order, unless, Jared, did I miss anything on that?
I don't think so.
Okay. Alana, that sound good, Nat? All right. So that, I guess, would be the motion and the second.
Can I just ask one thing, just to make sure that because the notice, the time frame is kind of tight for this, can we confirm the City Hall today so that we don't have to re-notice at a different location and slow things down? That would be, because I don't know where else. I'm sure maybe there's not that much, you know, that could conflict, but just let's confirm that.
We'll do that. There are a number of different rooms there, too, so, I mean, it's...
Okay. But no, we're working on confirming that right now. I just wanted to let you guys know we haven't 100% confirmed, but we're feeling pretty good.
All right.
Daryl has connections here.
Well, actually.
But yeah, to Julie's point, if something comes up that for some reason every room in the City Hall is booked, we'll have to do this again.
Okay. I have one other concern, though, on it. Thought of it after we scheduled it. It looked like Jerry was counting days closely for that notice with it being Christmas and New Year's for both the first and second notices, or however that works. Are we sure there's a paper when it normally would be so that we make it?
Yeah, I've called them on the phone and talked to them about it, so they will publish on the 31st both papers.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right, perfect.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Just thank everyone for all the work today, getting this all put together and all the other things we got through on such short notice.
Any further discussion? Since seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Daryl. The only thing I had down, I added PSC legislation discussion. I didn't have anything particular, but since we're getting close to the session, is there anything else that we wanted to talk about? I think we're all square, but
that I can think of.
Okay. Amy's got the stuff working out. John's got it working out. You got the bill drafts are floating around as we speak. Everything's tracking as of right now.
As far as we know.
Okay.
I've just a question I'll throw out. One thing that came to my mind, and it seems like I've heard this discussed in the past with some case that happened, but I've never really heard legislation talked about it. But has there ever been legislation discussed where, in the case of an insolvency that involves credit sale contracts, where if the trust fund exceeds what's needed to pay off the claimants on the trust fund, that money can be used to help make up that 20% that the credit sale contract recipients don't recover?
It is in statute that it doesn't cover credits. You know, credit sale holders cannot participate in the trust fund. So I'm answering this, but I don't think there's ever been legislation unless it was discussed during the indemnity fund conversation.
Was it kind of discussed?
I know the auditor wrote it up.
When that whole indemnity fund got created, was that an oversight or was that discussed and rejected as an idea?
I don't know.
I apologize. I was walking back because I heard the term indemnity fund. The question was...
In an insolvency where the trust fund exceeds what's necessary to pay the claimants 100%, but there are also credit sale contract claimants, a bunch of money goes, or some money then gets returned to whoever owns the elevator, and credit sale contract claimants end up with 80%. Was it ever discussed whether that money should then become available to help make up that 20% loss and rejected, or is that an oversight that we did it that way, or do you have any thoughts on that?
I guess I can't say for sure whether that was discussed or not, because that was actually, those discussions preceded my time as a director. But if you look in statute under the what a trust fund has been established for, it says that upon the insolvency, a trust fund shall be established for the benefit of non-credit sale contract receipt holders.
Yeah. I know the law is clear on it now, but I was just wondering whether that was something that was rejected or just never really discussed.
I don't know that it was
ever discussed.
Usually
you don't think of that happening.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's another question.
Okay. Going once, going twice, Julian.
Thank you, though.
Okay, the last thing I'll ask my colleagues is we're scheduled for 3 o'clock today to talk more about our staff and budget discussion. I don't personally like to move that up from 3 o'clock. I'd say we could do it at 11:30 or 1 o'clock, or I'm open either one of those.
Sooner the better for me. Even either, you know, 11:15 would be great.
Is 11:15 enough time, Daryl, to renotice it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. 11:15. That's fine with you too.
I want to make sure Astrid's comfortable with that.
All right. Well, let's do that then. 11:15. We'll come back and just the three of us is all for that one. So. All right, we'll close this special meeting. Thank you all.